first case this morning is SMR Rollaments versus the United States. Ms. McDonald, I believe you're starting. Am I correct?
Yes.
You're going to have to watch that time, all right? Because you're splitting up time all the way through. Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning. May I please report? This is not a case of an uncooperative respondent. This is not a case of a respondent who failed to act to the best of his ability. Therefore, Commerce unlawfully applied an adverse inference to NTN's freight calculation methodology. NTN fully cooperated by providing all of the information it had in its books and records regarding its freight charges and allocation, providing this in a timely and complete manner, providing an explanation of its freight charges, providing samples of freight bills and other charges.
If you're addressing the freight data versus the sales data issue, right?
Correct.
But the record seems to show that they repeatedly supplied sales data when asked to give freight data. And is that an accurate characterization of the record?
NTN allocated their freight charges by sales value because it does not keep weight, and therefore could not allocate by weight in their records.
But when you were asked to supply freight data by weight, you didn't comply in a timely fashion. Is that correct?
Well, we supplied the data, but it was allocated by sales value. That is correct, and not by weight. This was one of the alternatives offered to respondents by Commerce. And NTN availed itself of this alternative because it does not have the records to allocate these expenses by the weight.
But that, I mean, by saying one of the alternatives, in this case, I mean, I understand in previous reviews the Commerce Department allowed this information, but when you say this was another avenue available, what do you mean by that?
The questionnaire requested respondents to allocate by one of the bases on which freight was incurred, if one of those bases was freight or weight, then to use that. Or if none of these bases were available to a respondent, use an alternative methodology.
But they asked you at least twice in the questionnaires, did they not, to demonstrate to them that your method was not distortive or there were any less distortive methods. And it seems to me that from what I could review in the record, your responses were quite conclusory and really not responsive to the details in which over which the Commerce was questioning you. Am I wrong about that?
You are correct that they asked the same question twice in the original questionnaire and the supplemental to use an allocation and if there's an alternative to show that it wasn't distortive.
And would you characterize your responses to those as being very conclusory or as being very detailed and very responsive?
We believe it was responsive because we provided all of the backup data to show that this was the only variable in common that any of the shipments had in common. There is no allocation. NTN is unable to allocate by weight because not all of the shipments, in fact, many of them, are not charged by weight. And Commerce itself agrees that an allocation by weight in NTN's case would likely also cause distortions. We believe they concluded, without an analysis, that for some reason an allocation by weight is less distortive than an allocation by value.
But isn't that weren't you the ones that were supposed to explain that to them why that's not true rather than them explaining to you why that is?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. And we believe that we did by providing the backup data to show that a weight allocation would be distortive. There are many, many shipments in which weight is not a factor. So we felt that by proving this and by demonstrating this with the backup documentation, freight contracts, and other charges, that the sales value allocation, which is common to all shipments, would be the best method of allocation. And NTN provided all this information and stood ready, willing, and able to have Commerce verify this information. This was another explanation of why the value allocation would not be distorted. We believe that Commerce could have come in and verified all of the records that NTM provided and proved that value was a reasonable allocation. We believe that NTN has exhibited the utmost cooperation to Commerce in this, which is the 11th review of this order, as well as the preceding and succeeding reviews of this order. Freight information is only a small portion of the information that NTN provides to Commerce in each review. In fact, NTN provides thousands, perhaps more likely hundreds of thousands, of pieces of data in each review. NTN spends many months of each year preparing the data and exhibits required for the questionnaire response. It begins its preparation well before Commerce issues its questionnaire each year. This is necessary for NTN just to return the questionnaire response within the deadlines imposed by Commerce. We believe, therefore, that the imposition of an adverse inference was simply punitive. The hammer of the adverse inference could not have induced greater cooperation. NTN simply does not keep these records. It has no business reason to do so. So the adverse inference was a punitive measure in this case. NTN fully cooperated and acted to the best of its ability. We also believe that the application of facts available was unlawful. There was no evidence on the record that Commerce should apply the facts available because the alternative allocation methodology, as Commerce invited respondents to use, was used. We request that the court reverse both the decision for facts available and the adverse inference.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Mr. Ellis?
Good morning, thank you. I apologize, I'm recovering from bronchitis, so my voice is not as strong as it should be. This is another appeal involving the so-called zeroing issue from the WTO, which I had the pleasure of arguing before Judge Price a couple years ago. But this is going to make it clear, because there's some confusion in the briefing from the other side, we are not re-arguing the Corus case, the Corus decision. We're well aware of this court's position on the implementation process.
A lot of your brief talks about the need to wait until the WTO acts. Has the WTO now acted as of September 20th?
Two things. Actually, what we're really seeking is waiting until the executive branch acts, which I'll get to. The status now at the moment is that the WTO panel ruled against us.
Yes, that's what I understood.
The appellate body argument was held just before Thanksgiving, and the appellate body is issuing its decision in mid-January. What will happen then is that the executive branch will have to announce to the WTO in mid-February at the next meeting whether or not it will implement the decision, assuming, of course, it's an adverse decision. So all we're asking for here, it's really pretty modest. We're just asking for a stay, in effect. And I know you denied our stay last May, but at the moment, we're just asking for a stay basically for 10 weeks until mid-February, late February. If the executive decides they're not going to implement, we're not asking for this court to supervene somehow with a charm of that or anything like that. We acknowledge under the court's decision, that's it. If the executive says that they are going to implement, then at that point, it would be suitable for remand.
Implement what? Implement a decision adverse to you.
Correct. No, adverse to the government, adverse to the Department of Commerce.
But at this point, the decision has gone against you.
Correct.
So they'd have to reverse themselves at the appellate level and then uphold that at the executive level.
Well, they would have to reverse that at the appellate body.
Yes.
And then the United States at the following dispute settlement body meeting would have to concede, in effect, would have to announce it and would comply with the ruling of the appellate.
We're talking about years here, aren't we?
No, not really. Well, again, a couple of things. In February, if they say they're going to comply and implement, at that point, you could send it back to the department to permit them to implement.
I don't understand. I'm not following your answer, Mr. Generator, on the time frame. Is there a set time frame in which the appellate body is going to act?
Yes, January.
January
15th.
Do they hear it then, or will they have a decision?
Decision. They've already heard it. It's now in submission. The opinion's been written. And they will announce a decision January 15th, is the schedule. The appellate body.
So they could affirm, which means there's no reason for us, obviously.
That would also, you could stay until then and dismiss it then.
But if somehow they reverse, does it then go to the government? Aren't there other levels of review?
Okay,
and then the government has a statutory time. There's a set time frame.
The WTO has
whether to implement.
The WTO has a time frame for which the United States would announce whether or not it would implement. And that's the next
year. How do we know this will be implemented retroactively?
I'm sorry?
How do we know this will be implemented retroactively to cover Europe?
We don't. And that's something for the executive to decide.
But
that is something for you to remand, to let the department decide. If you do nothing now and simply affirm, the department, the executive branch, will have no opportunity to retroactively.
But then what about your next shipment in, right?
Well, but these shipments will have lost forever.
Yes.
So in effect, we will have overpaid duties. You know, the goal of obviously the dumping.
You would have paid duties according to what was due at the time, according to the law at the time that they were imported.
But the laws are subject to review, and there is a method for administrative decisions are subject to review and revision. And it would seem that we should simply give the executive a chance to decide that. Now, they will say, in answer to your honest question, that they cannot implement retroactively.
Yes, that's what they said in their brief.
Right, but that is not correct, without due respect to my opposing counsel. At the
you
WTO...
You can't point to anything specifically, though, can
you?
You can't point to any provision specifically that
the United States government...
they would be allowed to.
There's nothing that prohibits it. And the United States government has said that Section 129, which talks about prospective implementation, is not the exclusive mechanism. They've said that to the WTO, they're saying the opposite to you. They can't, both positions cannot be right. They're saying inconsistent things. If they are right, that the statute, by saying prospective only, means that they can't, that they're prohibited from
prospective.
If the statute is the exclusive mechanism, then fine, then once again, we're out of luck. But they are saying that that's not true, because if it is true, they're going to run into trouble in the WTO. So they are saying the opposite thing across the water. Now, if there are alternative mechanisms, it's simply to be appropriate for you to remand to them and let them use them, or decide if they want to use them.
You haven't pointed to me.
All I
said is they could.
Well, all we get is correct. But I'm not saying they have to. I'm saying they could.
You don't point to anything that allows them.
No, that's correct. Your Honor, they themselves, the executive branch, who should be given some deference, I would think, in interpreting the statute, has stated that, if I can quote from their statement at the WTO, Section 129.
How do you interpret the word prospective? That's in the statute.
Right. If the statute is the sole mechanism, then it is prospective only, and we would lose. But that would mean that no implementation could ever be done in administrative reviews, which is the American system, because reviews are always retrospective. The United States is aware of that. And so they've said that the statutory prospective only provision is not exclusive. Because if it were, they would run into serious trouble in the WTO. And the executive deserves some flexibility, at least for deference, in that interpretation. But here they're telling you that the opposite. They're telling you, no, there's no retrospective. And what that means is that they will never be able to implement in any administrative review proceeding. Because reviews are always retrospective in nature. I'm sorry, I passed my time.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. Let's hear from the government. Ms. McCarthy?
The common feature of the three issues presented for review today is that all have been presented to this court at one time or another before. And first of all, with regard to NTN's challenge to Commerce's inclusion of export price sales in the calculation of CEP profit, I did not hear NTN's counsel today address that issue in detail, if at all. But this matter, Commerce issued its policy decision in 1997. NTN raised a challenge to misinterpretation in 1999 to the Court of International Trade. The Court of International Trade sustained Commerce's determination in 2001 post-decision in Torrington, and this court affirmed that decision without opinion in 2003. With regard to NTN's challenges to Congress's application of adverse facts available, NTN made a very similar challenge to this for national trade. For national trade upheld Congress's determination in NTN published decision 306 F sub 2nd 319 in 2005, and this court in 2004, and this court affirmed that opinion in 2005. As NTN's counsel referenced, Congress repeatedly asked for information regarding weight, and NTN responded with the same boilerplate responses over and over again. Congress understood that...
Was this a somewhat unexpected shift in the way you requested the data to be supplied?
Yes, this was the first review in which Commerce did ask NTN multiple opportunities to provide weight-based data. This court, ironically, because of the time of litigation, previously that was a subsequent review in which NTN did challenge the fact that it had a lack of notice as to the change in methodology. The Court of International Trade rejected that that argument. And as Congress explained its determination in this review, it specifically to protect itself against this allegation of lack of notice, it repeatedly gave NTN time and time and time again explained to NTN why that it wanted the weight data. And what it was looking for was the weight data itself so that Commerce could decide precisely how distorted it was. NTN refused
to... What do you mean by the weight data itself?
Well, NTN clearly had invoices. Commerce wanted to allocate freight expenses based upon weight because it thought that that would be less distortive than sales value. NTN represented that we can't do that because there are certain transactions that are not, based there.
Was this something that was easy to get together, the weight data that you were requesting?
Well, Commerce was trying to...
I mean, was it a matter of... weighing the different items?
Well, that's what Congress was trying to get at. Clearly, some of the transactions, as NTN conceded in its multiple questionnaire responses, were based on weight. NTN's point was simply weight was not the sole basis. Well, Commerce wasn't looking for the perfect allocation basis. It was looking for the least distorted.
They said they didn't have this information and they couldn't get it together easily.
For certain of the transactions, it cherry-picked and...
Why couldn't you use the other information for those areas where they didn't have the data?
Because it wasn't provided. Because that's what Commerce was looking for. Commerce was looking for, give us the weight information, let us...
Yes, but if they didn't have the weight information and no easy way to get it, why couldn't you use the same information you'd used in every earlier review, namely the sales data information?
Because as Commerce explained in its determination, it believed that even an imperfect allocation based upon weight would be less distortive than an allocation based upon sales. And Commerce was looking for the data. NTN, as it explained in its determination...
They didn't have the data.
Well, they certainly had invoices because they were able to identify invoices of which weight wasn't used. Well, if they have those invoices, then why couldn't they turn over the invoices of which freight was allocated based on weight? Let Commerce decide. Make Commerce take a look. Commerce may have decided. I don't know. Commerce may have decided that NTN is correct. But the fact of the matter is they gave boilerplate responses. They never explained in detail precisely why their methodology was less distorted. Moving on to Commerce's treatment of non-dump sales, this is a case, we understand Coyo's argument that it is not challenging this court's precedent into the Kingdom and Chorus, nor could it. The Supreme Court has declined to grant a petition for writ of certiorari regarding this matter, and it's settled as a matter of domestic law. At the time Commerce issued the final determination, Commerce's determination was lawful. Its interpretation of the statute was lawful. It is lawful to this day. As a matter of domestic law, Commerce's determination was in accordance with law, and it should be affirmed. There's no just reason for delay. There's no reason why a mandate should not issue affirming this lawful interpretation. As we quoted the statement of administrative action at the close of our brief, Congress understood that there would be an implementation process, that at some point the executive branch may be implementing an adverse WTO decision, and that implementation would not necessarily render Congress's prior interpretation under domestic law unlawful. It specifically contemplated that there would be a position in which...
But is the other side right that the government is not consistently followed the mandate of the decisions being prospective only? The government does pick and choose and does have the ability to apply retroactively?
In this court, the United States, represented by the Department of Justice, consistently maintain the position that the statute unambiguously provides prospective-only implementation. That is consistent with what we have quoted in the statement.
But you review everything retrospectively. It's a review of retrospective activities, right?
But for the reviews, when COIA goes to the WTO and challenges Commerce's interpretation of the statute, and if it succeeds and the executive branch implements, then that implementation is prospective. It goes forward. NTN doesn't have any relief with regard to the entries at issue, because the entries at issue that are subject to the administrative, the final determination of Congress, Commerce rather, in this case,
we're talking about this statute. It says prospective only. Yes. That can't be accurate, can it? Because you do retrospective reviews.
It's prospective. Well, it's prospective to whatever entries are not liquidated as of the time of the implementation. But we shouldn't delay. In other words, there shouldn't be a delay in the liquidations of it that were at issue in this administrative review that were subject to a lawful interpretation by the Department of Commerce. But there is no reason to delay implementation simply because the law might change. That is a position that any litigant in any court in this country to take. Please stay my case because the law might change and it might make my frivolous case become less frivolous. That is simply not a basis to stay. The final determination of Congress was fully in accordance with law. If you have any more questions,
May it please the court. I would like to add a few things regarding the freight expense issue. First of all, one should keep in mind that the task that the Commerce Department has afforded in an anti-dumping investigation is foremost to compare prices.
And are you prepared to defend the Commerce's activities? Those don't really affect you very much, do they? You don't know what Commerce is, why they made their decisions or anything.
We have, throughout these reviews, oftentimes made comments that any allocation of freight expenses that is done by value is inherently distortive because it will move the freight expense to the higher priced sale. If you're looking at a dumped sale, an allocation by value will mean that in the home market, on the home market side, the higher priced sale will now have a higher deduction, so the home market price will come down, and the opposite effect will occur on the United States side. So inherently, the value-based allocation is an allocation that is predisposed to benefit the respondent, and it's not pricing.
I mean, Commerce didn't take the position in this case because they believe there's an inherent distortion or that there's a presumption against using sales data.
No, I believe that is inherent in Commerce's decision. It's a self-evident proposition that if you take a expense that is incurred on, say, based on distance or based on the contractor that you have or based on weight or based on whatever it is, if you allocate that instead of on distance or instead on weight, if you allocate it based on value, then you have an allocation that's no longer neutral because you're looking at the values, you're looking at the prices in your comparison. So your allocation is no longer neutral. Now, it may be that Commerce hasn't done the greatest job in explaining what the distortion really consists of. But as you have said, it's not Commerce's job to prove that there is distortion. It's the job of NPN to demonstrate to Commerce that it has not, that its allocation method is neutral. And this it hasn't done. On the question of cooperation, I think the relevant facts are for the court to note are the fact that Commerce exactly anticipated this particular issue in their questionnaire. I mean, the questionnaire said, if you have a situation where your freight expenses are allocated in a number of different ways, are incurred in a number of different ways, you know, weight or something else, then we prefer that you do your allocation on one of these factors, for example, weight, and obviously not value. And then they also asked the respondents to include a field in their electronic response that would list the weight for each bearing.
And if they had listed an estimated weight, would there have been an adverse inference based on maybe it was too high or too low?
No, there would have been an allocation done. But you have to also remember, Commerce is recalculation.
Remember, they didn't have this data.
Right, and so they had to still allocate by value. Commerce's reallocation or recalculation is still by value, so that bias against the petitioner and for the respondent is still there. But they counteracted that by allocating more expenses to the so that you know the main to balance the inherent bias that there is in the allocation at NPN. Does that answer your question? Maybe not. So we see it as an issue of accuracy, and the department doing its best with the questions that they laid out in great detail. They asked for all the data right from the get-go, and they repeated their questions to NPN in a supplemental questionnaire, and they got what they got back was exactly the same thing that they had before, slightly amplified. But they never got the freight data. And they never got the weight data, they never got the information. Keep in mind, NPN could have also, even if a complete adherence to what Commerce was proposing, it could have explained to Commerce, look, we can do it on these sales, we can't do it on these sales, we can do it in this channel and not in this channel. I mean, there's many alternatives that are possible, but that were not proposed or not discussed at all by Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Press.
Contrary to what Mr. Press says, Commerce made no such finding that a value-based allocation was inherently distorted in this review. It's just simply a joke. Do not believe it's on the record. To answer Judge Archer's question, providing this kind of weight data that Commerce has asked for is an enormous challenge. There are thousands and thousands of models. NTN is a large company. It makes many more bearing models than are the subject of this case. So it is not a simple providing weight data. For whatever reason, companies in Japan who ship bearings do not charge NTN on the basis of the weight of the product. It's not in their business records. They just don't need this for their business purpose. And I don't believe that there's a requirement in the dumping law that respondents change their record keeping simply to provide the information that Commerce requested. NTN did provide the information that it could. There is a reasonable allocation methodology in the record. Commerce believes that there is one that might be distortive, but maybe slightly less distortive. But we believe it did not provide supporting evidence for this on the record. Finally, I would just like to say, while it may seem like boilerplate language, if true, is still true. There is nothing else NTN can say. They do not have this information in their business.
Yeah, but let me ask briefly, because I don't want your time's going to run out. Who's got the burden here? I mean, didn't NTN have the burden in the first instance to come in and show that it wasn't, that sales was less distortive, information on sales was less distortive than the freight expenses, or come in and explain the hardship or the impossibility of the freight. I mean, you're putting the burden entirely here on customs to show what was more or less distortive, but it seems to me, unless I'm missing something, that the burden was on you all in the first instance to make that showing, not Congress. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're correct. And we believe that we did show this by providing all the information, by an extensive narrative response explaining how the freight charges are incurred. There are many, many shipments, many that are not, have no, weight is not a factor at all in the charge. So we believe that we showed by documentation, by all of these documents were available for verification, that this is the least distorted, most reasonable method for NTN to use in this instance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Mr. Ellis, we'll give you 1 minute. Most of your time.
Okay. I just want to point out again, we're only requesting a short stay. Only two things have to happen. The appellate body in January, the executive branch decision on the implement in February.
She says, if you, quite accurately, that any litigant could come and say the law may change in the future. Why wouldn't we just implement the law as it exists at this moment?
It's not that the law may change. It's that the executive branch is about, we think, we'll be told by the appellate body that
may get an idea that it should change its policy.
And that's it. It's not that the law generally. It's the determination in this very proceeding. It's as if you had two parallel proceedings in two courts on the same rest. Sometimes you would have one with stakes, the outcome of the other. There happens to be the WTO is not a self-enforcing part of the United States legal system, and so we have to go through you. We have to go through the courts, because administrative reviews are always completed before the WTO gets to the point. Just one other thing before you read still, to this day, have not explained the inconsistency between their two positions here in the WTO. They've said to the WTO that the 129 perspective only is not exclusive, and that there is a mechanism, a plain vanilla mechanism, of implementing adverse decisions by remands and going back to the agency to do something compliant. That's all we're asking for, is that you send it back to the agency and let them decide if they want to do that. If you don't, you're going to guarantee a violation of the WTO by the United States, which isn't appropriate. It's not just made by the executive violate, you're going to guarantee it. And you're also going to make sure that in future administrative reviews, we can't get compliance. Because this situation will always arise. Thank you.
Thank you.